Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Hannah George and I'm a screenwriter. I'm joined by author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where absinthe meets arson, Negroni meets necrophilia, and Grand Marnier meets Grand Theft Auto. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime. What do guilty people do when they panic?
Burn stuff.
I traumatised and I devastated him. And I say, ha ha ha.
Crippin shaved off his distinctive moustache. He's not stupid.
They don't have much of a brain there, do they, peacocks? I'm not being cruel.
I wasn't offended, no. Felicity, of all the things you've said.
Come and see the Drunk Women live on Thursday, the 1st of November at the Pleasance Theatre in London. They'll be joined by super sleuths Olivia Lee and Jenny Eclair. So get your tickets now.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hello and welcome to Drunk Women Solving Crime. Today our guest is best known for playing Lynn on Alan Partridge and has over 100 other credits on IMDb. She's here.
Do I?
And she's a legend.
I haven't seen her.
You do. You have exactly 100 credits.
Well, I'm old.
So it's not... It's not even over 100 credits. It's 100
exactly.
credits.
Yeah, but... ridiculous. Wow.
It's Felicity Montague, everybody.
Yay!
And I would be remiss not to introduce our guest beer, which is from Siren Brewery, and their stout Broken Dream won the Champion of Beer of Britain only this year. So well done, Siren.
Yes. Yay!
And thank you for the beer. Okay, so...
I felt all warm and fuzzy, Katie, because I thought she was going to introduce us. She's like, I'd be remiss if I didn't introduce you.
People are used to you two being here.
Taylor and Katie.
Taylor, I thought you were going to do that as well, actually.
Beer before friends. That's my motto. So, Felicity, will you kick us off and let us know about... Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Actually, I have. And it was a long time ago.
Go on.
It's when the father of my children, my husband and I, lived in Elsfield, and I was on the phone and I was coming out of my old street, Littleton Street, which I still love and I still visit people in the street all these years later. And I was walking along and I was on the mobile. I think I was talking I can't remember. I never think I was probably talking to my sister, which is not fair on her because she was completely panic struck. This nice guy was coming towards me, very tall, very large man, wasn't at all threatened by him, and he took a swipe at my head to get my mobile.
Whoa.
And because I was on the phone and I got a bit, apparently I've got a big voice, I ducked. And he just cuffed my head.
Wow.
And I held on to the mobile and I screamed and screamed on the phone and said, call the police, I'm on Tramier Road and blah, 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 blah. And he ran.
Oh, good for you.
No, yeah. But then I was paranoid because it was like that film. Is it Alien? Not Alien. The one where, it's a fantastic American movie where...
Now I'm stuck on Alien. I'm like, did he look like Sigourney Weaver?
No, it's not Alien. It's the one where you walk down the streets and you're thinking around the hedges.
Oh, the Triffids. Is it the Triffids?
No, it's not the Triffids.
The Body Snatchers. The Body Snatchers.
It's much older than that, but it's brilliant. I wish I could... It's really annoying. I wish I'd thought this through. But, you know, basically he has a mask and he's like... He kills all these people and he's got out of an asylum. It's one of the greatest...
Oh, like Halloween or something.
It's Halloween.
Hey!
First Halloween. John, that's it. No, it's all coming. John Carpenter, Halloween.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and so it was a bit like that after that. So I'm not saying I was going to be hung up on a wardrobe door or a kitchen door, but basically all the way back to the house, it suddenly occurred to me that this rather horrible thing had happened to me.
Yes.
And I slammed the door shut thinking he was probably following me, ran in, and then it took me about 40 minutes, and then I phoned the police. And, of course, by then it was far too late. And I was too distracted to actually give, so it was all just went and just went. And you get over it and you move on.
No,
but it wasn't
traumatic.
Nice. But it was in broad daylight and there were houses on either side. Yeah. It wasn't exactly even a road like this.
Whoa.
It was like a really narrow road with two houses. Not one person heard my scream.
Wow.
Really?
Not one. No.
Seriously?
No, absolutely. But it was very strange. Yeah. And he had his gear and everything he was wearing, he looked like quite opulent. He looked fine. He was very clever at what he was doing. But I now know he looked opulent because he nicks people's stuff.
Yeah, right. He had about 17 phones on him and literally.
Absolutely. No, so that was just, that's my little meagre.
Wow.
No,
my voice got
meagre.
Me out of it, which is great.
It's such an illustration of how people react. You know, the fight or flight reaction, honestly, because it's almost like you went into a different part of your brain and it didn't hit you until that walk
home.
The
intuition part. I've never had my phone stolen. Whenever I feel a little bit suspicious of someone might come and steal it, I always hold it. I don't put it away. I hold it really, really tight because I assume that if someone comes up to me on a motorbike that I'll pull them off the motorbike. Rather, I really think of my own strength a lot more than...
interesting view of yourself.
I really have. I'd get dragged down the road, I imagine, by the
moment. I actually lashed out because, you know, there's been all these moped thefts and I have been picturing
you
myself.
Must be careful.
I really, really think I am. But one day, because I had read a lot of articles about it, I sensed this moped coming up beside me, not up on the pavement, but just I was close to the road. So I kind of like stuck my foot out and kicked him a little bit. And it was just a Deliveroo driver.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I just like kicked a guy in the side who was taking somebody their curry.
Nice. That is dodgy.
Yeah.
I have actually committed a crime.
Go on.
Which I thought wasn't a crime. But when my daughter was five, she went to ballet school. She was Lala, like when she did races, relay races around sports day, I by mistake bought her some sports shoes that flashed. And my husband then was incredibly competitive. And she just spent the whole time going like trotting around, just checking her flash was working. And she never got to the end of the race. Steam was coming out of his ears with rage at her. I was absolutely furious. But she used to go to a ballet school. And I was determined she was going to stick to one hobby. And because she's always like, did the violin, gave it. I don't like it, mummy. Swimming, I don't like it, mummy. So I thought, you're already going to do this, girl. You know, if I kill you, you're going to do it. So it was down in Tooting. And actually, there was a ridiculous thing that the ballet room was one end of this recreational centre. And then the changing room was down the other. But it was a Saturday morning. And it was so, so busy.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let the parents, you can imagine, at the door and taken to the changing room.
Yeah.
No, they had to be taken in one really long file, single file. And so you kind of lost them.
Yeah.
But anyway, my daughter walked past and I checked her. She went past and I always started to move like a police, you know, like a police person. Like, right, you know, there she goes. And this man took hold of her hand.
No.
And he was wearing a Mac and I was like, 25 feet from him.
Jesus.
So I actually waded through, I mean, 50 people, literally throwing people aside.
Of course.
And... she didn't do a thing. She just put her hand up and took his hand.
Oh my God.
So I was beside myself, and I was all I could think was, you know, I didn't think anything, actually. I just went for it.
Yeah.
And I got him by the throat and I threw him against the wall.
Oh, yes. My God, amazing.
And then it turns out
what it turned out was that he was another father of a girl in the class. He said, and he happened to say, I think this woman's dangerous. And my response was, because we weren't allowed to talk to each other.
Oh,
I said,
no.
But why didn't you look? He said, that your daughter looks exactly like my daughter. So I just took her hand. And the school said, we're going to have to ban you.
What?
Whoa.
No.
But my argument was, you're being silly. Why? I said, I know my husband would never take the hand of another little girl because he'd be looking at her and talking to her.
And he's in trouble. Like, how dare he get out of being in trouble when he made the mistake?
Yeah, I think he was suspicious. But anyway, I came off really badly. And so we left pretty soon after that because it was like, I mean, Anna would say, oh, God, you know, typical you. No. But the thing that's so interesting is...
Oh, see, I was still with you. I'm like, yes, go for the throat.
So the really interesting thing is how much strength I have, which I don't have.
Well,
and
no.
Even then, I was much younger. I mean, she's 28 now, so I was 23 years ago. I literally could have lifted him, and he actually, apparently, I traumatized and I devastated him. And I say, ha ha ha. Stupid prat. Another stupid male wrapped up in his own egotistical, narcissistic little background sort of playground. You know, frankly, get a life and start looking how other people respond. So I was quite pleased I did it to him anyway. I wasn't... Yeah. The police didn't phone up. I wasn't arrested. I wasn't, but I was very close to it.
No, that's quite interesting. Like, fucking look at what kid you're taking, mate. Yeah, like, all of this is on him. It's outrageous. Yeah. Like,
but he made it like a narcissist. My problem.
Ugh.
That's what they do. They turn it on you.
It's ego that he got sort of like, you know, taken by a woman.
He
like
was,
that,
he was, he must have been embarrassed that he would look so puny.
Like, he wasn't puny though, he was quite tall. He's about
no, but you took
11.
Him down. Like, you took
I
him
fucking
down.
Took him down. I would like to have actually just screamed at him, but everyone was so upset around, people were sort of crying, and
That's
it was like a major
amazing.
Incident. And Anna was like, when I got home, he was like, fucking helpless. What is it about you?
No.
That is my flesh and blood.
Yes.
I'm not having some git taking my flesh and blood.
Oh my God.
Be joking.
I'm with you.
I was
all
so
the way.
With you. Yeah, honestly, I will not retract that round
and
of applause.
No, I won't.
I will not.
Like, I thought, oh, he was like the teacher that you just hadn't met, but like, fucking just another dad. Nuh-uh. Like, not acceptable.
What my daughter said was, I'm so sorry.
Oh.
I should have looked, Mummy. Because I just told her, I said, what were you doing, darling?
But she'd been told she was in a safe place.
Yeah, she was
like,
told
it
she was
wasn't
in a safe place. This is the trouble,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And now it's totally reversed. If a father did that now, they would be like, interviewed, saying suspect behaviour. Don't you think?
Yeah,
they would be taken to the cleaners.
I think there'd be a stronger reaction, definitely.
Because women have a stronger
behavior.
Word now, and I am so glad they do. But we're only talking 23 years.
Wow. No, that's
I was crazy. I was mad. Actually, all I wanted was my daughter being safe.
And like,
you were awesome.
You were awesome. And it's so obvious what your motivation was.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Thank you. That was very good. So that's the first part of the podcast. The second part is a bit of true crime.
Right,
we're
going
to try. You ready? Let's do it. Okay, so this is quite a well-known case. It involves the music hall, various love affairs, and a murdered wife.
Ooh.
This is the case of Dr. Crippen and the London Cellar murder.
Right.
Okay, so let's take this back to the beginning. Americans, Dr. Crippen and his wife, Cora Turner, moved away from America in 1897, and he became a doctor working in homeopathic remedies, and she a music hall artist. Now, where do you think they moved to?
They moved back to the States, you said.
They moved away from the States.
England.
Yeah, with big music hall scene in England. I'm going England.
Music hall,
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you said the murder was the London Cellar murder.
Yes!
I mean, I've got some serious deductive skills at play.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
Not gonna lie, it was a bit of a trick question, just to see if you were listening.
I was falling for it, then I'm like...
But. Yes, it was London. So Cora used the stage name Belle Elmore, and she previously tried to become an opera singer, but failed. Her husband, Dr. Crippen, was quite meek and mild, and he was her manager. Now, do you think she had a successful career?
Well, the way that you asked that makes it sound like she did not.
But maybe it's a trick question.
Oh, yeah.
All let's the best she, acts yeah. are represented by homeopaths, so...
Are they? It's a pile of crap.
Felicity called it.
I think she was successful. Let's go for that, shall we? Just out of interest.
All right.
Well, unfortunately, she was not.
Sorry, girls.
Apparently, she had very little talent, which is kind of sad.
Oh.
And my favourite bit is, during a strike of music hall artists, she arrived to perform at the theatre, crossing the picket line.
Ooh.
And Mary Lloyd, who we all know is a big... music hall artist who was supporting the strike is reputed to have told the other pickets to let Belle Elmore through as she would empty the theatre anyway.
Oh my God. Wow. Bitchy industry.
I know. Women can be very cruel.
They can, particularly Mary Lloyd, apparently. Yeah. Okay, so apparently Belle was an overbearing and dominant character, and Dr. Crippen, like I said, was quite meek and mild, which isn't really what you want from your manager. And to add insult to injury, Crippen was sacked from his job as a homeopath, as apparently he was spending too much time managing her career.
Wow.
So he lost a very affluent job. So once he'd been sacked, Dr. Crippen became the manager of Joliet's Institution for the Deaf, where he fell in love and started an affair with Ethel Leneve. Can anyone guess what her role was at the institution?
Wait, for deaf, what does it do?
Juliet's Institution of the Deaf, so for deaf people, I guess.
Like helping teach them things?
I guess.
So nurse, maybe?
Who do people normally have affairs with at work?
Nurses.
Was she the PA? Was she the secretary?
PA to the boss.
She was the receptionist. So in September 1905, Dr. Crippen and his wife took a lease on 39 Hilldrop Crescent in Holloway. Part of the thinking behind this move was that the pair could now have separate bedrooms. Things were not going well in this marriage. Mm. And apparently Belle was having affairs too. Indeed, I read somewhere that she was having an affair with a one-man band.
What?
So, like, you know, like Dick Van Dyke at the beginning.
Oh, wait, so you mean,
yeah, which is like, there's no subtle way of doing that if you've got cymbals between your knees. There's like...
I bet he was amazing in bed.
Yeah. Do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
Really multitasking. Yeah. I'd give that a go.
So on the evening of Monday, the 31st of January, 1910, the Crippens threw a dinner party for two close friends. By the time they finally left, it was around 1 a.m. on Monday morning, and it would be the last time that anyone saw Belle Elmore alive.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. So over the next week or so, people began to ask where Belle was. Crippen said that she'd gone to America. As the days passed, the story was amended, and suddenly she had fallen ill. Finally, Crippen told people that his wife had passed away. And people... I know.
But you first said she's away and then says, oops, she passed away. Yeah. I forgot the word passed. It's not a very good alibi, is it?
Yeah. So yeah, they were asking where she was, and he said that she passed away, and people sort of believed it until, like, within a month, guess who he had moved into the house?
Secretary.
What was her name? Ethel.
Yes.
Ethel.
Ethel and Eve.
Did she turn up to the dinner party?
She wasn't at the dinner party.
Right.
That would have been a good twist, though.
So she's clear.
She's clear.
We think she's clear.
Well, yeah. She's got no alibi. Well, no,
Where was she? Did anyone ask her where she was that night?
I don't know. Yes.
Good don't give us away. You're giving us away.
Detective Montague coming in hard.
So how long would it have taken to get from England to America at that time? Like a month on a boat?
Yeah, quite a while on a boat. Yeah.
6-7 weeks probably.
6-7 weeks. So he's got like a 6-7 week to go, yeah, she's in America. You can't check for 7 weeks.
I don't know why he didn't stick to the story.
Yeah.
He kept changing his story, this guy. And so Ethel Leneve has moved into the house. And guess what Ethel started wearing almost immediately?
No, she didn't.
She did. She did.
She wore her clothes?
Well...
Oh, the ring? Did she wear the wedding ring? Are any of these correct? Because I'm excited.
She started wearing her jewellery.
Okay. You were right.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm not sure if that was the wedding ring, but what...
I mean, that's a gateway to the wedding ring.
Yeah.
It starts with a necklace.
But you know, if you're going to America, for example, you're going to take your jewellery with you, aren't you?
Yeah.
So... But it is generally believed that Ethel didn't have any idea what Crippen had done, which I will get to in a minute. But I don't know about you, but if I like moved in with my boyfriend, I wouldn't immediately be like, oh, why don't you just start wearing all this stuff he has left? Like, no.
No, it means she knew she was dead. Because you don't touch other people's property if you think they're alive, because they could turn up any time, meet you with the jewellery on.
She must have been in on it. Because also you'd be like, why have you got all your wife's stuff here? Can you get rid of it before I move in? This is creepy. Rather than, hey, I'm going to wear this.
She knew.
She knew.
Team she knew.
And we get on so well.
So obviously, when Ethel moved in, started wearing all the jewellery, friends grew suspicious and passed their suspicions on to the police. Now, this is when we meet our detective in this story, and it's not Felicity. Felicity is a great detective.
Should have been.
But it's a chap called Walter Dew. Now, I'm quite a big fan of Walter because he became very determined to catch... To catch Dr. Crippit. Now, bearing in mind this was at the beginning of the 20th century, mm-hmm. there was an unsolved case from about 10 or 20 years before that you worked on in London. What do you think it was?
Like, Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper. Was that? Walter had worked on that case?
Walter Dew, yeah, the detective that is dealing with this.
Celebrity detective coming in. With guess what? I got an unsolved crime.
Yeah. Yeah. Guess what? I screwed that up. Give me another.
One more chance in history. Let's do this.
Inspector Dew turns up at the house and Crippin happily showed him round. He also tells Dew a different story again. He says that Bell had left him for another man. Dew told Crippin that it would be better if Bell contacted him personally to confirm the story herself, and Crippin said that he would place an advertisement in a newspaper asking for her to make contact. The officer left, and then what did Dr. Crippin do? Do you think he put an advert in the paper?
No,
he did not. He did not. And this is the first of Dr. Crippen's biggest mistakes. Because Inspector Dew, at that point, didn't actually suspect anything was wrong. But Crippen panicked. And what do guilty people do when they panic?
Burn stuff.
Katie, you're speaking from experience. he did a runner.
Of course, that's the most obvious giveaway. to America.
Well, you'd think so, right? But the next day, on the 9th of July...
This guy is strong. Yeah. I mean, relax.
He does not make good decisions.
He does not make good murder.
He's a terrible murderer, is what I mean. Like, literally, one of the worst we've had so far.
Did he take his wife with him? Or the new girlfriend?
Well, yes. Crippin shaved off his distinctive moustache. He's not stupid. Because I'll whip that off and they'll never find me.
Done.
And he travelled, the next day he travelled to Brussels with Ethel.
Incognito.
Yeah, where they bought tickets for passage to Canada and boarded the SS Montrose. Oh. So when they did that, they're not stupid, so they decided they'd do it in character. Now, what do you think these two...
Musical.
That would be amazing. We're not guilty.
We've got 6 weeks to Canada.
What? I mean, it's not musical. That would have been amazing.
It will be now.
Ridiculously, they actually went as father and son.
Oh my god.
But I'd never have thought that one up.
No way!
That's crazy.
How extreme.
That is crazy.
What kind of jewellery did this woman leave behind?
I know.
It's like Run DMC.
It's like wee Jimmy Cranky.
Of all the choices, why would you go Yentl? Like, I don't understand.
She was a boy.
Yeah, she was
because she
boy.
Was a bit younger than him.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it could be clever if they did it well.
But they did not. And okay. can you think of how they might, for example, have given themselves away?
When they used the bathroom on the ship?
Snogging.
I was thinking that too, on the balcony.
Yes. Yeah. Literally, they would hold hands.
They had a very active sexual relationship. No, they obviously did, because it was an affair, wasn't it? And so they're in the honeymoon period still.
Yeah, I love that, just after you've killed your wife.
It's just wonderful, isn't it? Yeah.
So homosexuality is obviously illegal in 1910.
Yeah, that might be.
And they're kissing. And they're father and son, so it's incest too.
It's the whole lot.
It's the whole gamut of illegal sexual activity.
So he was a complete, again, narcissist, out of control.
Yes.
He was actually out of control. He was an extremely dangerous man.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, everything I've read about him says that he's very meek and mild.
But they are the worst. Trust me.
Yeah.
And they're called covert narcissists.
Yeah.
Covert narcissists.
I like it.
Nice. Sounds like a good band name.
Well, look it up. It's terrifying.
Oh, God. Ooh. Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey.
If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So back in London, Dew hears that Crippen has done a runner, so he goes back to the house, and this is hilarious, on the fourth time they searched it, they didn't find this the first, second, or third time. Yes, they did.
Oh my God!
In the cellar. He notices some loose bricks and wow. a terrible smell. Oh, beneath those bricks, yet they found the remains of a body. The body was headless, limbless, and boneless.
Oh, oh God!
What was the last one? And what was...
Boneless. Sorry.
What? Boneless.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
The fuck?
I know. Like the bones.
Oh, that's so creepy.
Isn't it?
Oh, this just took. I mean, not that murder's ever okay, but that wasn't just a like, oh, a crime of passion. That is a sadistic. Do I have to spell this out? This is a sadistic crime.
Yes, this is somebody who's actually breaking down that person to the point of just total and utter annihilation.
Psychologically,
because he's so disgusted with himself, so he has to be disgusted with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
covert narcissism. Again.
So the body was female and wrapped in a pyjama top. So by this
His pyjama top?
I believe so, yes. So by this point, Dew had a tip-off that a suspicious father and son were on the SS Montrose heading for Canada.
It's not time to make a change.
I'm fascinated with what he does next.
Is that what that song is about?
It is now.
So Dew decides that he's going to catch Crippen himself. So bearing in mind Crippen's like halfway across the Atlantic Ocean.
He's in the
right
middle
now.
Of the sea now.
Absolutely. He got on a faster ship, the SS Laurentic. And he starts speeding after him. And this is why I like Walter Dew, is that he doesn't just get the police in Canada to like apprehend him on the other side. He's like, I'm gonna catch this fucker myself.
And he manages that's what Jack the Ripper does to people.
Yeah.
Like that's what it would take to inspire
Not
this
again.
Kind of passion,
right?
So really what we need is a few unsolved murders so we can have some real detectives with vigour. That's what we want. So he manages to sneak onto the SS Montrose, and I'm not entirely sure how he does it. Probably from ship to ship. I'm not entirely sure how he does it.
Wow.
But hey, like...
So he boards the ship, unknown to the dubious father and son.
Yes,
well, he must
have
docked somewhere and he just gets on. I mean, that's a simple thing.
Or he rows across, like in a... Capers kind of film.
Can't catch up with a steamship, though.
No, he's on a faster one.
Maybe they stopped in Bermuda.
Yeah, they had to stop and he got on there.
But they might have done. I couldn't work out how it happened.
No, they had stopped somewhere. His ship got in there quicker. He worked it all out.
He got on. So, classically, he goes in disguise as well. Of course he does.
What is this farcical thing that you found?
As their auntie?
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what do you think he disguises himself as?
Oh, okay. A fortune teller.
Taylor?
Oh my goodness, I don't even know what to guess. A magician.
Felicity.
God, I can't even think. A member of the staff?
That is, that is spot on,
that's
actually.
That's very good.
Promoted once again to
We're like,
a spy.
What's the most outrageous thing you can be so you can fit in?
But it's such a big ship that he could dovetail in. I'm amazed the staff didn't realise, but that's...
Well, the staff knew.
Oh, okay.
That he was in disguise.
They accommodated him as a
member. Yes, they did.
Oh, clever,
they're
clever,
in
clever.
On the sting, I love it.
Yeah, as one of the pilots of the ship. What I love about this is he didn't have to. He could have just... he literally didn't have to.
He wanted to watch their behaviour, get the document, and then document it.
This is what he did. So,
whatever that meant.
Apparently, they asked Crippen if he wanted to meet the staff of the ship. And Crippen, he's not an idiot, he was like, yeah, sure. And,
he's an egotist, he's a narcissist, you see?
Yeah.
He can't resist attention.
To the ego.
He has to have attention.
Absolutely. And in the lineup, Dew looked up at him, shook his hand, and said, "Good morning, Dr. Crippen. It's me." What a guy!
Wow.
And what did Crippen say?
Well, apparently, after a pause, Crippen replied, "Thank God it's over. The suspense has been too great. I couldn't stand it any longer." Wow. And then he held out his wrists for the handcuffs. But the thing is, like,
he's so dramatic.
Too. It really is, isn't it? But he's always said he never done it. Like, he's...
Even after he said he didn't do it.
So he's like...
The whole time he has said that he never did
why
this.
Why did he hold out his hands for the handcuffs?
I don't know, but
you know,
why...
he's got a little collection of personality disorders, I reckon.
So one thing is what they did, another one of his mistakes, is they went first class. So obviously they were getting more attention.
First class incest.
There's another band name.
So if they travelled third class, they might have got away
with
it.
Yeah. But he wasn't going to do that. He wanted to be the big shot.
Status, isn't it?
Status
all
the time.
He's his own worst enemy.
And just one other thing on this.
His
on the
poor
way back.
Son.
On the way back, when on the ship back to England, I saw this. There was this photograph of Walter Dew, and he's just playing shuffleboard on the deck, like he's on Cruising the Jane McDonald. Nice. Like,
imagine taking on the case of Jack the Ripper, seeing all these mutilated women getting traumatized in your own right when you're not even allowed to express your trauma because you're in that role, and then not catching the guy. Imagine what that would do to you. And this would just be
I can make
the
it
last
right.
straw. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So it was decided when they got back to London, it was decided that the pair should not stand trial together. Crippen would face his trial first, and he was tried for 5 days. So Crippen, like I said he didn't do it. What do you think his defence was?
She did it.
Oh.
Oh, he blamed
did it. Ethel did it. Taylor?
Pass. Just let me think about it for a second.
So, like... So
it's not insanity.
Self-defence. Sorry.
Oh, that's
good. Another
good
one. Yeah. Well, what he did is he claimed that the body found in the cellar of his home was not Belle's.
Oh,
I that was his. And just, would you like another drink?
Yes,
no, thanks.
Yes, I would like a pop-up.
Yeah, so he said that it must have been some poor unknown woman who had been placed there before he and Belle had moved in 1905.
Could they tell how old the body was, though?
If it was
back
still
in 1910,
smelly.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
That's the thing, that even without that...
Well, there's some stuff on that.
Okay, so, all right, we're leading us on.
So it was therefore crucial to the prosecution to prove that the body was Belle's. And unfortunately for Crippen, the remains had been wrapped in, you remember, the pyjama top.
Right.
And the tag inside that jacket led to the manufacturers Jones Brothers, and they confirmed that this particular cloth and pattern was not issued until late 1908.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Proving that the body must have been there after that date. Yeah, and they moved in 1905, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Even then they were thinking,
what a satisfying little piece of detective
really
work.
Walter Jew. Walter Jew, absolutely.
Yeah. I love this guy. I've got a little crush on Walter. Does anybody else? Like, I just want to get a drink and see what he's like off duty.
I mean, he's dead. But
doesn't matter, Hannah. Doesn't matter.
So medical tests also shown that the flesh contained traces of hyoscine, which is a poison. And this is similar to the Madeline Smith case we did a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you think bought some hyoscine 2 weeks before Belle vanished?
Ethel.
No, I bet he did it. He bought it himself.
Well, I would have said Ethel.
It was Crippen. Yeah. And he had to sign the register.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why would he have got away with that? He should have got her to do it. I mean, he was foolish, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, very.
He wasn't a good murderer, as we say. No, you said it before.
Really bad at this.
Yeah, really bad at this.
How long do you think it took the jury to decide he was guilty?
Well, you said 5 days that he was
the trial went on for 5 days, and then
the jury
retired.
Oh, then they had to deliberate.
They deliberate. Yeah. Well, when did the evidence
10
come
minutes.
In about the shirt?
10 minutes. Well, all through
they
the trial.
They had everything.
Like,
okay.
Everything. They have everything, and then at the end...
I think it took them 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Half an hour.
Half an hour?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Taylor was closest. It was less than 30 minutes.
Really?
Wow.
There are people online who are trying to sort of prove that he didn't do it. And
oh my god!
Yeah.
Really?
It's so weird.
I know.
Honestly, why do people always sympathise with a crook and fall in love with him? It's like it's a sexual thing. They sort of look at the picture and they think, "I'm attracted to him. Therefore, he can't be bad."
So he was hung. That was his punishment. So he was hung.
He's just due.
Yes, he did.
He was
and
hung.
Ethel was tried as an accessory to murder.
Yeah.
Do you think she was found guilty?
I bet she wasn't.
Well, see, people were sexist in 1910, and that she would have been, I think, people would have been more upset with her dressing as a man, almost. Because that was really against the strict social code of the time. I reckon they would have seen her as a ne'er-do-well, partly because of the murder accessory and partly because of dressing as a small boy and then fornicating on a boat. Dressed that way, so I feel like the prejudice at the time means that she could have very much gone down, but I also feel like maybe she played it like she was a victim and maybe she got away with it.
Yeah, but how could she get away with it? Actually, now I'm thinking about it, I've done a U-turn because she dressed as a boy. She knew they were after
that's
him.
That's just it. Why do you go in disguise if you're
that's
an
guilty behavior.
Why do you get talked into like, sure, I'll play your son?
But
that sounds fun.
Love is very powerful. We have to remember, love is very powerful.
And she's a lot younger than him.
But there was no acknowledgement of that. Do you know what I mean? There would have been this
known about the dead body, so it's possible.
Felicity, you're spot on with what the defence was, because her solicitor used the defence that she was blinded by love.
Wow.
That's find these legal cases, it's blinded by love is a big legal problem.
Well, if you've got 12 men on the jury, because women weren't allowed on juries, they just go, oh, yes, yes, that makes sense, that checks it out, yes.
See, I'm shocked that they would use that as a defence, and that's so interesting.
Although, no, I guess that plays into the sort of like, women have no sense, especially when men get
so emotional.
Yeah,
but a lot of the crimes are about love, aren't they? When you think about it, it's people having affairs, and the wife gets jealous, or the husband gets jealous. A lot of that is.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as time.
Yeah.
Ethel changed her name, married someone else.
Wait, so she does get away with
it? She does get away with it. Sorry,
what?
She was found not guilty. Ethel changed her name, married someone else, and kept her identity secret until she died aged 84 in 1967.
Wow. So she completely changed her...
Changed the whole thing. No one knew who she was.
And so her new partner didn't know?
Didn't know, no, well, I assume.
Bloody so hell. She was capable of deep, dark secrets.
Yeah. Yes.
So she was probably guilty.
I think she may well have known. I think, like,
I feel like she knew.
It's a weird old kink as well, isn't it, to be like, would you mind dressing as my son? Like, do you know what I mean? Is he saying that it is?
I want to know what she changed her name to. I guess
I'm not sure that's public knowledge.
Still, because the family descendants wouldn't want it to be public knowledge.
Maybe. I mean,
it's to do with the family descendants.
Yes. Do anyone want to guess whether or not Madame Tussauds made a waxwork of him?
Indeed they did.
Within 5 years of his death, he had a waxwork in Madame Tussauds in the Chamber of Horrors.
Wow.
Yeah, the kicker for how creepy this is. Yeah. Is that in 1925, there was a huge fire at Madame Tussauds, destroying almost everything except Dr. Crippen's waxwork.
You are joking.
Other things survived. It wasn't just his. But there is nothing creepier than a waxwork that has survived a fire.
No.
That's extraordinary. But even other waxworks survived.
Nothing would make him happier than that. Like, even in wax, you can't get rid of me.
Yeah. My fascination is, did they uncover whether he'd killed other women before?
Ethel would have been next if they hadn't been
caught. I'm sure. She'd have gone eventually. Nowadays, they would find that out. But not in 1910, I suppose.
Yeah. I bet he did it before, too.
I'm sure he did. He knew how to do it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
He knew how to take the bones out of a body.
That is
Christ, that's
a certain way.
How would you take the bones out of a body? How do you do it?
How
did
you get
thought.
That knowledge without a bit of practice?
I suppose he had been to medical school.
Yes, but I mean, how do you suck bones out of a body and keep the skin there?
Silly? No, you're not at all. I mean, to be honest, I was reading it, I was like, ooh, I don't know how he's done this. But to round off this
I was going to offer an answer, and I'm really glad that I didn't.
Yes, why don't you? Because I'm fascinated. Okay, all
right. Google it later, but just turn off your IP address.
You'd have to leave it. Yeah, I don't want to, no.
Okay, so just to round this off, as we had with Lizzie Borden the other day, there's actually a song about this whole thing. I don't know if it was a nursery rhyme, I couldn't find the tune, but it goes something like this. Dr. Crippen killed Belle Elmore, ran away with Miss Leneve, right across the ocean blue, followed by Inspector Drew. Ships ahoy, naughty boy.
Who wrote that?
Talk about making light.
That is offensive. I mean,
I think the detective wrote it. He got his name in there. I caught him.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
Could you imagine? Isn't it weird how these like horrible, horrible things become nursery rhymes almost?
There's such a dearth of children's writers. Like, well, we got to entertain the kids. Yeah. Nobody wants to do it, so.
Yeah. But you know what? I regret teaching all those horrible nursery rhymes to my children
now.
Yes.
Well,
because
based
oranges
in the
and lemons are the bells and Sinclair. I mean, all these, they're all horrific. They're all about the murders and everything that happened in
that's
the East
true.
End. They're really unpleasant.
Yeah.
How have they become
a
national anthem almost?
Yeah.
For little baby children who were innocent. I just can't believe I never looked into it until after years.
It's weird, isn't it? Ring of Roses, that's the plague, isn't it?
It's horrible.
They all fall down, they all die.
Yeah.
It's insane. So I think that
the wheels on the bus. Fuck off.
I actually have to say, I used to sing a song to my daughter. I'm not name dropping here. I was at the National in a production called The Chagrin when I was in my late 20s. And it was, where are you going, my pretty, pretty maid? Whatever. And anyway, I used to sing this to my daughter every night, thinking I really lulled her to sleep, rushed back from work and lulled her to sleep. Aww. And one night I walked in and I sang to her over the cot. And she must have been about a year and a half. And she said, oh, please, not again.
A year and a half.
She said, anything but that. Please, please. like this. And I just looked down and thought, I have created a monster. I have created... And also, it's so egotistical of me to think that, you know, my... What's so ironic is that I thought I was lulling her to sleep. And in fact, I was driving her fucking insane. Isn't that terrible? Absolutely terrible. I mean, I really got my comeuppance.
Very good for me.
Oh, that's very, very good.
It reads like four
stars. Not really, not to a daughter.
Well, on that note, that is the end of this part of the podcast. Well done, everybody. Yay!
Drunk women solving crime.
So we've had a listener write in and see if we can help them with a crime that's happened in their own life. So, dear drunk women, please help. The local village peacock named Captain has gone missing. Rumour has it... I mean, these are very middle-class crimes so far. My Jesus. Captain,
it's been eaten.
Straight in. Straight in. That's from Susan, aged five.
Sorry.
No, it's not. Has gone missing. Rumour has it he moved villages, or that the local foxes had a feast. He was sighted in Dorothy's garden at 1:30 p.m. on the 11th of August. However, there were no traces of feathers in any nearby fields, so I don't think a fox got him. It made the local newspaper, but they haven't been able to locate him. Please, drunk women, how can we get Captain back? That's some tea.
Well, it's not a fox. It's the other ones that have been released from the... they're running wild in the country now. Another animal that's... oh, God, I can't remember what they are. But
like a fox?
Yes. They're not really... They're not the fox family, but there's another... Because I used to live in the country.
Yeah.
And they are... It'd be one of them, probably. And they
I thought... So I think that's solved,
too. Sorry, no, I shouldn't have mentioned it, because actually I haven't...
I've actually forgotten it.
They were released from a zoo or something, and now it depends
like
on where she lives.
On purpose? Or
oh, God, eat them. Yeah,
honey's in the Cotswolds, if that helps.
Yes, well, that's it. That's what's happening in the Cotswolds.
So it's the thing that Felicity can't remember.
What made this a village peacock? I mean, was Captain... consenting to living in this village? Like, was it penned up?
No,
I have so many questions.
You didn't pen up a peacock.
So how does it stay in one village anyway? Because you feed it.
Where did it come from?
Because they're fed and
they belong to where they stick around.
It's like a dog. A dog likes their owner because they're the owner that feeds. So that's that mentality.
It's turned up and gone, okay, I'll stay here.
Yeah, I think so. Someone named it Captain. I think it was probably quite a big peacock, so bigger than the rest. That's how they knew it was.
How long do peacocks live? Could it have died naturally?
That might give her a lip solace.
Sorry to be grim, but I suspect it's been eaten.
It's probably been eaten, hasn't it?
By like an animal rather than a person, right?
Perhaps I ought to be more sensitive because this person's upset about the peacock, aren't they? Occurred to me this person's upset.
The only time I've ever seen them, though, and I don't know if they're technically social creatures, but they're always in a group. And I feel like if there was just one lonely captain, Captain needed a lady, maybe.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a peacock
flirting?
He found
a wife.
Oh, what do they do?
Oh, it's really beautiful, actually. They kind of step back. But they shimmer like this, and it's like a sign to flirt.
I think somebody stole it.
Okay.
I actually think this was a deliberate.
But
I don't think Captain's
dead. That's quite upsetting.
If you know that there's a village, like, okay, we're in the Cotswolds. It was probably, imagine being like a teenager in the Cotswolds, and you're like, what do you want to get up to? Do you want to walk around a beautiful village?
You can't steal a peacock, but where would you put the peacock? Somebody would actually... work out where the peacock is.
Yeah, you can't really hide a peacock. They're quite flamboyant.
You can't really hide a peacock. They're a bit big when they put out their feathers.
Maybe, okay, lots of people holiday in the Cotswolds, so maybe it was somebody from...
Oh, and then took it back home.
Yeah.
I like that the peacock left for love. I think
so
that's really
nice. So you want the peacock to be alive, don't you?
I really do. I don't want Captain to be dead. Who wants Captain dead? Not me.
I remember I went to a wedding once where... where there's in the car park, it was a really posh wedding as well, and there were all these really, really shiny cars, but a peacock had got into the car park, saw its reflection in these cars, scratched the shit out of them. As somebody that took the train to that wedding, it was fucking hysterical.
That's fascinating. So it went around all the cars.
Yeah, well, it definitely got three because a sort of very apologetic man from the location of the venue. He came around saying, "Do you own a BMW Z3?"
Oh my God.
And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And then he was like, "Will you come with me?" And it wasn't mine, obviously.
That's extraordinary.
I know. So what I'm saying is, he might be in the car park.
That's amazing.
He got on the wrong because that BMW driver tracked him down.
Oh my God, it could be the guy.
Revenge! Oh no! Captain finally saw himself.
Wow.
But
come back to narcissism. When a narcissist, that old mythological story, that when a narcissist, they say when he fell into a puddle, he sees his own reflection and falls in love with himself. But a peacock didn't do that. The peacock was horrified that it may have been another male. The peacock didn't fall in love with himself, which he should have done, because he's very beautiful. He actually thought that was a rival.
Fighting it.
He thought it was a rival. Isn't that interesting? Different mentalities. They don't have much of a brain, though, do they, peacocks? They've got a small head.
No.
I'm not being cruel. That's a...
I
wasn't offended. No.
Felicity, of all the things you've said, really take issue with that.
I thought I'd be more like a teddy bear, a bit softer, a bit kinder. Perhaps. I'm sorry.
Don't be.
You've been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show, Felicity. What do you? And before we go, Felicity, do you have anything sort of coming up that you want to plug to?
I'm actually at the moment in Vanity Fair, ITV.
Yes, I saw it last night.
Yeah, but
it's
only in four episodes.
You were so funny in it. You're brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
and I'm in Julia Davis's new series for HBO as well. On Sky. It's called Sally Forever.
Amazing.
And that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And HBO are over at the moment with Julia in a studio, locking her in there.
To write it?
It's all filmed and done. Right. There's obviously an Alan Partridge again, as everyone knows, in January. I've just finished something called Death on the Tyne for UK Gold. It's a film. It's a murder mystery.
Oh, cool. Is that what you picked up?
And Duma Keegan's in it, and Jane's Fleet.
Wow.
And lots of very, very good people, actually. So it's great fun to be in.
Amazing. Well, fantastic. Catch all of that stuff. Yeah. Sounds amazing. Thank you once again.
You've been amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, ladies.
You're
very
the most
clever.
Ruthless detective. Will you come back and do it again?
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman, with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then write it in a review and we'll solve it. Thank you to Acast and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.